Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and today is Friday, January the 3rd, 2014. It is our first Aramaic Friday, and we're looking forward to this with Dale Hoffman. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart. It's awesome to be here with Dale Hoffman and doing our first Aramaic Friday in a while, and we'll be doing that for at least the month of January, and we'll talk to Dale about maybe even beyond that, but let's just go ahead and welcome Dale to the show and say hello. How do you be, young man, and Happy New Year.
I be great. Happy New Year. It's been interesting here weather-wise the last couple of days. Where are you at? You in Missouri?
Missouri. We're in Branson. It's showing that Monday the temperature is going down to 7 degrees. So it's a little chilly here. It's clear and sunny, but it's cold.
Yeah, we've got sub-zero stuff on the way. So yay.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Yay, we should be in Florida or Costa Rica.
Yeah. Well, you'll be in Costa Rica soon, right? I just saw that on your site. So.
We will. We're heading back there to do an intensive, and we're putting together a Heartland South project. Actually, one of the things that we'll be announcing within the next 2 days is a conference call that we're going to do, and invite people to join us on a conference call to help put together the whole concept of what we'll be doing. You know, in all the years of doing this work, it's always been done just on our own hook with the cash flow that comes from donations and such. So this is going to be the first time we're going to actually do an official fundraiser, and we're looking at an awesome piece of property in Costa Rica, 50-plus acres with 1,000 fruit trees, 9 acres of organic greens. They supply the whole Central Valley with greens, and perfect space for a recording studio and put the whole project together. So that's something we'll need to talk about some more, but just one of the things that I just I've been learning more and more about Costa Rica, and here's a country in 1948 that outlawed the military and uses the military budget for education and healthcare and sanitation. They are aiming to have a carbon neutral footprint just of their own volition by 2020. 90% plus of their electricity comes from solar and wind, and they're aiming at 100%. It's pretty awful.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about Costa Rica. I've got a lot of friends that have been going down. I've got friends that have moved down there. I haven't been down yet, but I've been talking with Loretta. Of course, you know my wife. Been talking about going down there sometime soon, because everybody seems to be talking about the energy there and the openness and the culture and the lack of so much Big Brother like we have here in America. So.
Well, it's so many arenas. They spend 15 cents on health care for every dollar that's spent in America. And if you look at the stats, and they've got numbers on preventable deaths and all that sort of thing, and they are right on a par with the United States in terms of the hundreds of countries in the world. They're right about the same place in terms of healthcare results, and they spend 15 cents on the dollar compared to this country. So it definitely says something about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. The U.S. is in a situation or in such a position that I don't know that people have a lot of faith in that if tax money was to go into that sort of pot, that it would be used properly, unfortunately. So, yeah, I don't know. Is this your first retreat in Costa Rica? I know you've done one, or I know you've been there before, but have you actually done a retreat there before?
No, this will be our first intensive, and it'll start on February the 21st. We'll be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive. Unless we actually haven't solidified that 100%, it could be a codependence. It just depends. If the early adopters, as folks start to tap in and say, this is the one I'd like to do, then we may shift that. But at this point, we're looking at a Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and people can go to the website and tap into that. But in the meantime, do you have anything on your mind exciting to share with us about what's happening on the cutting edge of Aramaic science?
Well, speaking of like weekend things, intensives and retreats, I have one in a tropical location coming up next month in the beautiful tropical area of New Jersey. It just kind of came together in the last few weeks at a Hotel Indigo in Basking Ridge with Albert LeChance, who I think you've connected with before.
Awesome.
Yeah, the two of us are doing one called Embracing the Cosmic Christ. That's pretty exciting. In terms of me and my work.
What day are you doing that?
It's the 7th, 8th, and 9th of February. It's a Friday. It starts Friday at 7 p.m. There's different packages. People can either it's on my website. The packages aren't on there yet. We're still getting the information from the hotel, but they pay for the retreat. And then there's for commuters, they can either just do the retreat, or they can have a food and accommodations package, or they can do just food, or neither if they want. They can just come to the events. It's at a Hotel Indigo, a really nice hotel up there. So haven't done it in a hotel like that before. We'll see how it goes.
Cool. So folks can go to dalallenhoffman.com and get more information on that retreat on Embracing the Cosmic Christ. Fabulous.
Yes. Yeah, and I've got a couple new MP3 downloads that have gone up in the last couple of weeks, and then I've been editing a lot of audio lately, a lot of talks that I've given over the last couple of years, trying to get those out there too. So been a lot of editing, a lot of staring at screens and listening to the same phrase over and over and over again. And
well, that's pretty cool. And you know, we oftentimes on the show will bring up the word Christ in the context of it being an office in the Aramaic, being an office, not the name of a person, and that in the same way that one would say, you know, if Jerry is elected mayor, we would call him Mayor Jerry. That doesn't make mayor his name, it's his office. And so this idea, you know, you go back to Paul and he talks about the Christ in you, that office, that state is achievable and attainable in you. And so tell us about the approach you're taking with this cosmic Christ idea.
Well, you know, if you look in Strong's Greek concordance, the word Christos, which I must say, Christos, the original symbol for that word Christ was just an X. A lot of people, you'll hear people say, oh, no, Xmas or Xmas is such a mockery of Christmas. And unfortunately, that just shows people that haven't done their research. Xmas was a common, very common abbreviation, and X was a very common abbreviation for Christ. What Christ means straight from the Greek is channel of God. And it's funny because what they would use not only in those early sort of pre-Christian churches, but going back to the Coptic, Egyptian, and Sumerian, they would actually anoint people. A lot of times you'll hear it means anointed one. They would anoint people with shea butter, olive oil, different kinds of oils and butters and things of that nature. And what the anointing was it was the physical ritual that represented the opening of the crown chakra. And there have I've actually seen lately I've been calling it the Christ chakra, opening the Christ chakra. I've been seeing so many old texts talking about the seven chakras, the seven energy centers. And of course, it's amazing because if you look into Mary Magdalene, where it says that Jesus cast out seven demons, that word, first of all, the word for demon in that case is sheada, and sheada doesn't mean like this sort of evil entity that somehow takes up somehow gets inside of you and takes you over and rules your life like a demon would be today, like sort of The Exorcist and Linda Blair, etc. But what that word demon actually means is there's actually several words for it in Aramaic, and what it means is an unacknowledged spiritual energy. It's an energy that's in the system that you're just not conscious of. It's suppressed or repressed, and you're not looking at it. You're not letting it process. You're not letting it circulate through the system and be a part of the whole. It's kind of cordoned off. And it's funny because that word napu, that means to cast out in this case. That what that really means is not necessarily – it could mean to cast something away, to throw something. What it also means is to stimulate the movement of something. And what
ties
actually,
right in with the forgiveness process.
Yes, absolutely. What it says is that in Aramaic, it actually says that Yeshua stimulated the movement of her seven unacknowledged energy centers. Gee, what could that possibly be? You know, the seven energy centers, the seven chakras. And, of course, they were coded as churches in the Greek kingdom when you look in the book of Revelation. And that word church in Aramaic is haikla. That word haikla is the chaya means conscious life energy. Save means the word save is chaya. The word salvation is chaya. The word life or conscious life is chaya. When you hear the la sound, that la, which was a suffix in this case, that lamed, that letter, what that meant was that something was in movement or something was gathered in one place. So when you hear the word church, what it actually means is a gathering of conscious life energy. So when you hear the cleansing of the seven churches or the seven chakras in Aramaic, it's talking about those seven energy centers. It's so simple and clear when you just look at something in its earliest language rather than excessive translations. But, you know, some people will hear that and they'll literally just say, you know, oh, it can't be that. It can't be that. And you'll hear the phrases like washed in the blood of Christ and all these maybe well-intentioned things and memorizing thousands of Bible verses and using those as weapons, that somehow wearing that mask and coming from that actor, you know, from that what Yeshua called the ape, the hypocrite, that veil, that mask, that persona, rather than coming from the Christos, which is that open channel of the infinite that comes through us. It's all changing now. And I can't say enough about Pope Francis. Wow, it's just awesome. It's so time. And I'll tell you one thing, if it wasn't him, that entire organization would probably be crumbling at this moment. So
it's definitely time for a new wake up. And you look at that definition that Yeshua gives of the Pharisee, and as he talks to you Pharisees, for you keep the outside of the cup and the platter clean, but the inside is full of, and of course the Greeks translate as ravening and wickedness, but it's hostility and fear, unacknowledged energies hidden at an unconscious level. And, you know, the reason why we're so dedicated to the forgiveness process is because it is through first century Aramaic forgiveness that we get to collapse the projections from those unacknowledged energies that keep us in terror of something outside of us, and allow those energies to move, allow them to open through the forgiveness process. And that's the whole bottom line of the reality management worksheet that we've developed, is to show people how to access and move those energies and remove them. So it just ties in beautifully. That's cool.
It's all... people ask me all the time, you know, if I could have been alive at any point in human history, you know, when would I want to be alive? Not including things like reincarnation, etc. And I say, you know what, I am alive in exactly the time and place that I want to be. People are like, oh, you wouldn't want to be walking around with Jesus? I'm like, I'm here for a reason, and I'm completely focused now. excuse me, and I just can't even hardly imagine living at a more prime ripe, that tuv, you know, that prime ripe time in human history and human awakening as we are right now, because there's that huge shift. I mean, just in the last 20 years, but if I was talking about the things that I'm talking about right now, say if I was alive back in the 50s, I probably would have been cut down some time ago, you know, and maybe,
right.
You know, maybe now it's people are just, they're more open, and especially the young, when the teenagers, early 20-somethings and, you know, into the 30s even, they come and they're like, you know, drop the religious BS. I don't want to hear any of that crap. They're like, just give it to us exactly like it is on the page. And that's the thing. You give it to them like it is on the page. You show some nuance of that. You don't have to embellish it. You don't have to give it bells and whistles. It speaks for itself. It's those ones that we have to kind of think that we got to go in and defend. The reason we have to defend some sort of really bad translations is because you don't feel it. I mean, when you get to the core of what something really means, it pops and it lights you up. And that's one of the greatest things for me, is to be up there and popping things for people, whether it doesn't matter if it's 5 or 500, and feeling the energy interchange between myself and those people that it's popping for. It's just such an awesome, it's an awesome, awesome, awesome thing to be a part of.
It's fun when human life shows up, isn't it? And,
yeah.
You know, you talk about Francis, and I really believe that if they let him live, he's going to change the world. And I believe that it may be time for him to live through this. And if you look back in the history, and it is back, I don't remember exactly when, I guess it was late 50s, early 60s, a fellow named Luciani was elected Pope, and he was having the same conversation as Francis is having, and they killed him within 30 days.
Mm. Yeah,
they made it 30 days. There was no autopsy. They disappeared his body. Totally, completely suspicious. There's an interesting book, if you want to check it out, called what was the name of it? In God's Name.
Mm. I've got another one.
About what happened to Luciani, and he was having the same conversation as Francis is having. So we just hold a space of safety and support for Francis and his whole conversation about being about the real work and moving it forward in the world. Is pretty awesome.
Mm. You know, there's a great book also. It was called The Popes, A Dark History, that you can actually get, like when you walk into Barnes & Noble, and they'll have books on either side of the door, or sometimes in the bargain thing. It's called Popes, A Dark History, and it goes really deep into that as well. And it goes into a lot of the interesting history of the papacy. Interesting. Guys like Pope Leo, who was in power back at the time of Martin Luther. It's amazing. One of those things that I tell people is he loved cakes. He loved to have parties. First of all, he blew all the St. Peter's building money on parties. And one of the things that he loved, jumping out of his cakes, you know how you have those cakes and you have people jump out like dancing girls, whatever. One of the things that Leo loved to have jumping out of his cake was 8, 9, and 10-year-old naked boys. So, of course, a lot of people will hear something like that and think, oh, let's not talk about it, or let's not look. But this is the time for us to look, not to dredge that stuff around, but to almost embrace it. And that doesn't mean we're condoning it. That's one of the things I'm letting people know. Look, forgiveness does not mean that you're not holding someone accountable, but it does mean that you're holding that accountability from a place of presence, from a place of consciousness, of awareness, not from the stuff that you've got locked in your system that you haven't forgiven. Rather than making them feel for what you haven't addressed, that fear and that hostility, you're actually able to go below all of that, peel those layers back, and bring it in from a place of love and peace and presence. And, of course, that's what that Christos actually meant, channel of God, completely different way of living.
Yeah, and the truth is that there are insane minds in every field on the planet. You'll find people who have that kind of insanity going on inside of them within what's generally called the church, which is the Roman church, but you'll find it in the Baptist church and in the Presbyterian church, and it's just kept quiet. You'll find it in medicine. You'll find it in the practice of psychology. You'll find it in business. You'll find it anywhere you go. Law. I mean, there's some crazy stuff that goes on, and it's got nothing to do with the profession or the institution that people are part of. It's just when non-human life takes over in any realm, it gets crazy. And, you know, it's just time for the restoration of sanity and embracing that mind that was in Christ, that higher mind of love, and bringing it into our physiology so that it runs our lives rather than the insanities, the unresolved insanities, or the unmoved energies from the past.
You know, look at the way back in September when we were seemed like we were going to go really quick into Syria without any kind of UN approval, and the people stood up and said, no, it's not happening. It isn't going to happen.
Yep.
War against war, this is not happening. And guess what? It didn't happen. So, I mean, we've got that. We've got that power. You know, I think probably one of the greatest lessons I've learned, not only about myself but about anybody, is everybody's got something going on. And the thing that, to me, and I've said it 1,000 times to you, probably at least 100, saying I'm so grateful that I started with your work and starting with that actual, real, true understanding, the Aramaic understanding of forgiveness, of, you know, removing the root of my suffering, canceling it, you know, untying the knot, that rather than sort of coming in from this heavy scholarly angle, which I did go into for a while and realized that was kind of a dead-end street, because it was amazing. There was no practicing of forgiveness in a lot of it. There was no living it. It was just arguments about what people in their mind were cognitively thinking about something and what the information they did have at their disposal, such as, you know, someone says that the world is not flat, that it's round. It's like, oh, God, no, we have no proof of that. And, of course, the entire cosmos revolves around the Earth, right? So in the beginning of these kinds of things are coming in, it's kind of bumpy. But I'm really seeing people now with the forgiveness work. People come to me and they're like, you know, I did this workshop and it was all about forgiveness. And I'm like, yeah, or I read this book or got these tapes or something. They're like, it really didn't have anything to do with what you or Michael Rice are saying about forgiveness. I'm like, well, what was it exactly? Well, we were letting ourselves off the hook. We were letting each other off the hook. We were letting other people off the hook. And I felt great, and we were crying, and it was great, and there was a great energy release. And I was like, yeah. And then they're like, you know, a few days later, and that she called, the one that I did all the supposed forgiveness work with, and it was still there, and I still felt it. And I'm like, well, you know, this is something that happens in layers. They're like, no. It was still there as much as it was in the beginning. It's amazing. There's things, and I don't mean this as a finger-pointing, but I always steer everybody back to why again. Why is this happening to me again? I've been doing more private sessions, like phone sessions and Skype, one-on-one Skype sessions, than I ever have in the last few months. And it always includes me talking about the worksheet and the process and getting that to people and understanding that, you know, when it's removed, when you really get it out of there and you're in a situation, a similar situation again in the future, you just don't feel, you're not locked up. You're conscious in that moment. You're able to be conscious in it. And I tell them that's how you'll know if it's real or not. Just because you have an energy surge and you feel great that you've let everybody off the hook, it's that great analogy you have of sort of cutting the bell and the fire alarm and then going back to sleep while the fire just rages on. It doesn't work like that.
Right, right. Well, let's check and see. We had a number of people who were excited about you joining us today that had questions about the Aramaic. So let's check with Jeannie and see if there are any callers with a hand up in the phone queue. Jeannie?
We do. We actually have Julie. She had called yesterday and asked some questions about the Aramaic, and Michael told her to call back today. So, Julie, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi there, Dale. Hi, Michael and Jeannie. Hi, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you. My question yesterday was about these Greek translations and any translations that are once or more removed from the pure original Aramaic. And I'm wondering if an element, the main element that is just overlooked, it has to do with what I believe is also in the Hebrew language, that there's this sort of alive energy of each letter, this active breathing, this this, you know, the pure core connection to God in each letter and each word. And somehow that was written into the Aramaic so that it was, you know, the primary factor of any language or the language. And then if that's removed, that's just simply removing the power of the movement and the allowing things to transform from perhaps one meaning to another. And an example I used yesterday, Dale, was the word bitterness. And I heard someone on a radio show going back to the Hebrew Aramaic saying that one definition is just purely of the circumstance and the outer world, the situation, the reactive energies of anger and resentment. But if you take it further and allow God to move through you, it turns into a strength and builds character and helps purify the heart, something like that. And so there's this energetic aspect to the Aramaic language that I'd like you to address and explain if possible.
You know, that's a much bigger question. Well, maybe you realize that, but it's a huge question because the answer has many layers, but then so does the question. First, I'll kind of address it without going too far in layers. First of all, in terms of the letters, the actual Hebrew letters that were what would, you know, today, Ashuri, which would be the most common form of Hebrew today, biblical Hebrew, when there was a time when the Aramaic and the Hebrew letters, actually the Aramaic letters were mimicking or mirroring the Hebrew letters. Right around 100 AD, Estrangela, or some would say Estrangela, depending on how you pronounce it, came into play in modern day Edessa, Turkey. I'm trying to think of the name of the town, what it was named then. And the letters of Aramaic sort of lost the sacred nuance in terms of how they were written. What's in the Kaboris is Estrangela. It's not the biblical, original biblical Aramaic writing. The pronunciations were very close, though. The difference just was how they were written down. Now, the Hebrew letters, Michael, of course, turned me on to Stanley Tenen 20 years ago. Stan Tenen from the Meru Foundation, look up meru.org, meru.org. There's tons of videos you can watch of his stuff free. I've got hours and hours of his DVDs. Meru was actually a temple that comes from Sanskrit philosophies that was a temple in the spirit world that was this perfect temple of light and the perfect temple of love and peace. That is manifesting itself into the physical world. That's where the name Meru comes from. But Stan actually goes into the shape of the letters and how the shape of those letters, when you actually, they all come from one single form that you can create with your hand that looks kind of like the twirl of a flame. And one of the beliefs was that the Hebrew letters came from the flame, they would say. But as you turn them three-dimensionally, it actually alters your state of consciousness, and you can create the entire 22-letter series from the one hand shape or one flame formation that just gets turned in different directions. Now, the thing about Hebrew that was unique was that they were very conscious of what was written down on the page in terms of the letters, in terms of how they looked. The thing that's unique about Aramaic, and this is what my first book is about that I'm nearing the end of it now, called Echoes of an Ancient Dream. It talks a little bit about the Hebrew and some other languages in terms of the writing styles and the letters, but what I go really deep into with the Aramaic is that it was very much about the tonalities in Aramaic. It wasn't so much about the written letters, it was more about the actual spoken sound or the spoken words. And I go really deep into toning, etc. There's so many layers of nuance and meaning in just a simple Aramaic phrase. The sort of last piece of the answer here is something called pardes. Pardes is, in Hebrew, it's four words, peshat, remez, drash, and sod. Pardes is an acronym that actually created the English word paradise. And what Pardes is, Pardes means orchard. It means a place of plentiful, fertile vegetation. It could be like sort of like a rainforest. All of those are examples of the word Pardes in Hebrew or Aramaic. Now, what Pardes is, it's the four levels of understanding, a translation. The first level, Peshat, is the simple top-level translation. So a top-level translation would be like the word Avun, the first word of the Lord's Prayer. It means simply Our Father. If you look at it colloquially, in other words, how people speak it one-on-one, it's just Our Father. If you go down a little bit deeper, you go to Remez. And at the Remez level of this, what that actually means is this, Abun, Abba, Abi, the different forms of dad, father. Some say papa, although some disprove the sort of papa thing. But essentially it means father. You go down a little bit deeper, you start doing some research, and you start finding out that not only did a child call the father Abba or Abwun back, well, not really Abwun, but Abba back then, but you find out that parents were calling the children Abba. And like a little boy could call his sister Abba. It didn't mean simply daddy or father. What it actually meant was my beloved. Okay, now that's the second level, the Remez. If you go down to the Drosh level, Drosh is called the similar, the self-similar level. It's where you take all the different places where a particular word shows up in a sacred text, and you find what all the possibilities of meaning are through all of those different nuances of meaning, and then you try to find the common thread that runs through them. Now, if you go down deeper to this third level, this sort of similar, the self-similar level, the comparison level, the drosh level, what Abba actually means is something closer to what Crazy Horse said to a Sitting Bull back in 1877. It's a lot like Namaste. What it actually meant was, I salute the light within your eyes where the whole universe dwells, because when you are at that center within you and I am at that place within me, we are one. And that's not even the deepest level. The deep level, the Sod level, Sod means secret in Hebrew. Now, Sod and secret doesn't necessarily mean that you weren't allowed to see it, that it was locked away and only special people could see it. What Sod actually means is it's something that's right here in front of your face, and you're not actually seeing its true nature. This is actuality versus reality. You're seeing your concept of it rather than having a direct experience of it. And when you unlock Abba or Abwun on that level, then you get something closer to our one absolute eternal being of which we are born forth. We're all part of this one single unity of being that lives and breathes within itself. Now, you can stay on the surface level if that's what you want to do. You know, 99% of, I would say, evangelical Christianity stays completely on the surface, goes slightly into the second level. If you get into some of the sort of more open Christianity, it'll be on the first level, the second level. It might accidentally hit the third level. When you get to metaphysical translations, it's like on the second level, the third level. It might accidentally touch the fourth level. But when you really just go straight to the Aramaic and look at it exactly as it is, not as a spoken colloquial language, but rather the deeper meaning, that's when it unlocks. And that's when you start looking at something like the word Rachma. Ra is a shining forth of heat and light. The Chum sound is the old Hebrew word for womb, or center point of being, center point of body. It means the center of the soul. It means the middle of your consciousness, the center of your awareness. And the Ma sound is amazing because in anthropology, Ma is the sound most often uttered by a child as the first sound in relation to the maternal figure, the mother in their life, on the planet, even if it's not in their language. Ma is the sound most children say. There's even apes and monkeys that use the word ma in relation to the mother. That's something pretty eternal. So you look at Rachma, you've got a shining forth of heat and light, the birthing forth from that inner feminine spiritual womb. It's amazing when you start looking at it on that level. Like I say, that's actually a short answer for something that could have been a lot longer, as long as the answer was. So there's lots of nuance in there.
Wow,
that's awesome.
And
we'll add another piece, Julie, that you might want to dig out. I know you've got a copy of the video, Empowered to Heal. And the whole essence of what it takes to be empowered to heal is that if we hold an energy that's not moving in us, one we've denied and dissociated from, as we move throughout the world through resonance, we produce a result like that energy. So if it's hate, fear, anger, attack, rejection, whatever, we'll produce that energy. The person who allows, and you know, come full circle to what Dale was first saying, the person who opens the space, forgives and allows that energy to move in them, learns from the movement of that energy, and then becomes the space, the energetic space, for the healing of that energy. So, you know, in terms of empowered to heal, the person who walks through the planet having an unhealed issue resonates that issue everywhere they go and multiplies it. The person who walks through the world having faced and healed that issue is the space, and they're empowered to heal. It is the space in which that issue is able to open and move in others and heal. And I think that's the strength aspect that you're talking about. So everything that you refuse, in the Chinese language, the word for danger is the same word as the word opportunity. And so everything that we hold and are unwilling to move in us, when we're willing to let it move, it gives us a gift, and that is a new strength. So, you know, it's awesome how it all ties together.
That's just, you know, I think I've said it on the show before that when you hear fear God, what that actually means in Hebrew and Aramaic, the word tedkal, there's different forms of the word. The root is usually ted with the kal sound at the end, the kap and lamed letters. And what tedkal means is to be firing on all cylinders. It doesn't necessarily mean to be afraid, okay? In other words, the way I explain it to people is, let's say that there's a mother and she's got her child. Her child is playing in the front yard, and all of a sudden a car comes racing down the road, and she darts straight for the child and grabs that child, you know, grabs him, pulls him back, you know, off the road. And then I'll often say, when does the fear set in? They'll say, well, after. And I'm like, that energy, that essence, that firing on all cylinders that you get that gave her superhuman strength that enabled her to lift the car off of the child, you know, all these superhuman things we hear of, especially from mothers, that's what tedkal meant. It meant to be wide open, firing on all cylinders. It did not mean to be afraid of and somehow cowering away, because what is the sense of cowering away and being in fear of something that you are? You are the essence of that one. You are that manifest here in human form. It doesn't even make sense when you see that greater vision. And that's what, you know, that's why it's so important, you know, the work that so many people have been doing, Rocco, Erico, Neil Douglas Klotz, Andrew Gabriel Roth, Michael, myself, whoever it may be, just little nuances out of the time. And people are looking at it from different angles. You know, Rocco, Erico's sort of more theological. You know, Neil Douglas Klotz is coming at it from sort of almost like a Sufi, mystic kind of a way. Michael is getting right down to the core of, all right, what do we do with this? What are the tools? You know, I'm sort of kind of skating around, coming from, I think probably the focus of my work is about presence, and it's about coming from that place of presence. Of course, you don't get to presence if you don't do the forgiveness work. And it's amazing, whatever people are looking for, they're going to find it in all these different sort of nuances of the teaching. But unfortunately, if forgiveness is not there, then something's missing, is all I can say to that. But real, true forgiveness.
Thank you.
It was great to hear from you, by the way.
Yes. Yes, and I love what you're saying about toning. I really think music's going to play a really big part in just instantaneous healing for widespread healing.
Yeah, that's actually a lot of what I'm going to be doing this year before the book hits is going to be, I'm working with several different musicians on things like meditation CDs. I've been recording my Aramaic toning circles, and I've got some really, I've developed some great fans/friends like Steve Vai. Steve Vai is a real dear friend of mine. He's an amazing guitar player. He played with Frank Zappa and David Lee Roth and Whitesnake and all these bands, but he's an amazing musician, and he's been sort of helping me like kind of step back and feel my way through presenting toning in different ways to people, and I've really boiled it down to pure sounds even. Like when I start my toning circles now, we don't even start with words. We just start with sounds, like the sound ah, and I'll have people feeling their way through sounds, not even telling them what sound to make, but actually sitting down, just being conscious, and start moving through sounds, you know, empty the house out or sit by a stream and just start going, oh, and start moving those sounds around, higher, lower, different, you know, letters, whatever it may be. You start finding little sweet spots, and it's amazing because the Aramaic language had that. It had these sweet spots. It had this very resonant quality to it. And in that aspect, I think I mentioned it maybe last year that I was digging more into first century Galilean Aramaic, and I've been working with Steve Caruso. He's the world's preeminent, well, by far probably the one that knows more than anybody on the planet about Galilean Aramaic, the actual dialect that was spoken in the Galilee in the first century. And he's been painstakingly reconstructing it, and I'm one of his students who's actually now working with being able to slowly be able to communicate in the actual dialect that Yeshua would have spoken. That's pretty cool stuff now. In the end, perfect pronunciation isn't really what's important for everyone, but for me it's a kind of a cool thing to kind of get under my belt, so to speak. I've got all, you know, speaking of letters, I've got probably 6 or 7 different styles of writing the Aramaic and Hebrew letters in my head. I've got different dialects that are mumbled up and jumbled in my head because there's just so many, kind of like you're in Boston, and you can have someone in Boston talking about Pak and the Ka, and then you get someone who's, you know, down in the South, and you get them in a conversation together, and they can't understand each other. You know, Aramaic is kind of like that, and different nuances of Hebrew as well. So obviously something can get lost in translation over 2,000 years, but it was a great question.
Well, I have more, but I'll bring another one tomorrow and let you move on today. Thank you.
One of the things, Dale, that happened when Jeannie and I were in Europe is it became clear to me as I listened to you know, people speaking Swedish or Danish or Italian, Portuguese, as I stood back and listened, of course, those frequencies coming out of the throats of people, that little flap of skin firing away in the throat, didn't put out words, and that all of what we call words are really babble, because, of course, if you don't have brain cells for a particular language, it has no meaning. If you do have brain cells for a particular language, English or any other, then you bought into a way of thinking and speaking and are controlled by, and you look at the idea of people spell words, and you just look at the deeper meaning of that word spell. What is spelling? It's putting people under a spell, and our words, our babble, have us under a particular spell. And the waking up, you know, Yeshua talks about he who having eyes does not see, perceive, she or he who having ears does not hear, that we're under a spell created by the babble of our particular culture and our particular language. And every language on the planet is really, I think, a result of that whole Tower of Babel. Everybody's speaking a different language, and whoever makes up the meanings for the words is in control of that culture. Whereas I suspect if we go back to the Aramaic, we're dealing with the original frequencies that flowed from the Creator. And pre all of the Babel, we have those direct energies, and I think that music also is another pure direct energy that isn't tied in with Babel. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, Stanley Tenen said that he, well, it's funny that he makes, well, he doesn't make it as a joke. He says it seriously. He says my one talent in this life is as a visual pattern recognizer, and I'm sure he's got many more talents than that. But Stan says that, you know, you speak of hearing the languages, and when you don't know what the actual words are that they're saying, you're able to hear the lilt. You're hearing the nuance and the tones and the vibration. Stan says very clearly, and I say exactly the same thing on my end, he says that if he was fluent in Greek, or excuse me, if he was fluent in Hebrew, when he first started looking at the beginning of Genesis in its original Hebrew, he wouldn't have been able to see the nuances of the patterns in the characters or the letters themselves, because he would have just seen words. And that's where the magic for me is, not being a native Aramaic speaker, is I didn't come at it looking at words. I saw letters and I saw roots, and I was able to see the root meaning of different words that maybe a commoner or someone that was colloquial Assyrian or Aramaic wouldn't recognize those kinds of things. You know, they wouldn't be picking that apart. They would just be words to them. And it's funny how the deeper I get into it, that's sort of like one of the challenges is for me, is to be able to be open enough to not get lost in the words, but rather let myself ride the waves of the vibrations themselves. And it doesn't mean that the words aren't important, but in truth, in the beginning was the milta, bereshit etowi hua milta. Ta genders the word milta, feminine. Milta is the word that was translated as word. It's logos in the Greek. Logos in Greek does not mean a word on a page. Milta in Aramaic does not mean a physical, masculine, written word on the page. It means either the observation of a written word, or it means the speaking of a word. It's about the feminine. The ta, the feminine, means direct experience, not something physical, but rather something that's a perception or an awareness. It could be me hearing. In other words, Michael, when you heard those languages that you didn't know exactly what they were saying, that was a milta experience for you, because you are having a feminine perception of the masculine sounds that were leaving their mouth. The experience they were having in speaking those words was feminine. The sounds are masculine. Your perception of words on a page is feminine. The actual words linguistically and hermeneutics in language studies is masculine. And we're right back to actuality and reality again, that it's not about the concepts of the fingers pointing at the moon. It's about understanding that you are the moon, and that moon, that energy, that essence, that light flows through you. And that's, you know, in terms of the toning that I'm doing, that's kind of the key of working with sounds, not just words and phrases, whether it's Aramaic or Sanskrit or Greek or whatever, even Lakota we do. It's about being open to let the sound move through you, and understand that when you're open enough in this present moment, and your tuv, that word tuv means ripe, fully present in this moment, that the sound will move through you. It's exactly like life itself. When you're fully present right now, and you're 100% completely here at the end of time, which is when time and space fall away. When you're completely present, life lives through you. The word lives through you. The word is not on a page. The word is not coming out of someone's mouth. The word is the experience. The word is the essence of that. It's the mind energy. It's the emanation of living law. Law as a true state of being, not rather an ordinance that you need to live within like a fence. There's just so much beautiful nuance in that in Aramaic.
Right. Well, and I think that another way to say it might be that be careful. If you bring a brainwashed mind to an event, you get to experience the content of your brainwashed mind instead of the event. And that's where Yeshua talks about how a child shall lead them. The child doesn't bring an educated, brainwashed mind. The child brings being, and they have a direct experience of something. And when we collapse through forgiveness, the output of the brainwashed mind, then all of a sudden we get to have a direct experience. And it's interesting, another place to apply that idea is that you look down through the ages, and the really true big innovations that happen in any field usually come from people outside the field. They haven't been brainwashed to think of it in a certain way. You know, educare, the meaning of the word education, the root of it is to draw out. It doesn't mean to put in, and yet we live in a world that wants to brainwash us and fill us with its meanings. And those meanings that we become filled with block us from experiencing what's actually there for us to experience, and we're stuck in that babble again. So it's interesting how the circles just keep unfolding.
Hmm. And they will continue to keep unfolding. That's the beauty.
Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's check with Jeannie and see if there are anybody with a hand up in the caller queue, or if there's anything happening in the chat room to be aware of.
So we do have a question. Let's see. What made you get into the sound part of the knowledge?
Me?
See? Yeah.
You know, it actually started at Heartland in 95. It was kind of like a seed that, and you know, that's actually how my book begins. My book begins with me at, I can't wait to like get it to Michael and get his input. It begins with me at Heartland in the summer of 1995, digging through a box of cassettes that had words like, to me, what I was seeing was Enrico Caruso and George Lama, but in fact it was Rocco Errico and George Lanza. And I was digging through this box of cassettes, and I found one that was called The Aramaic Prayer of Jesus. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, from Rocco. And I put it on, and I heard, you know, with Rocco's sort of drawl that he's got. He's got that really wild voice. And it just took me to a place that I'd never been before. And I immediately sat down and went through the entire prayer along with him, but learned the first couple of lines. But I actually found myself sitting there going, oh, and nobody had ever said, do this, tone this. He didn't even say it. It just sounded like that, oh, wound. It sounded like something that, it just drew me in. And I remember I walked out of, I don't know what Eternal Support's called now. I think it's got a different name. Is it Eternity or I don't remember. But walk out onto the dirt road toward the Heart Center, and I started going down toward the lake. And I was just quietly, people are walking up to me, and I'm just quietly under my breath going, oh, walk all the way down to the lake and slipped a canoe into the water and had a paddle, and took myself out onto Bull Shoals Lake and went out of the finger there near Heartland and went around a couple away and went into this quiet little cove, and I started toning. The thing that's so profound for me is it just came through. Nobody said, do this. Nobody said, try, you know, making this sound or in tone. I didn't know what toning was. I was doing it for about 12 or 13 years before I even knew that it was toning or intoning. It just kind of happened organically. And then I started realizing that I was doing it when I was a kid. My little girl Shemaya, she's a little over 2.5. She'll walk in the room and just go, and then run back out again with a big smile, you know. It's just this natural hum. There's this natural vibration, essence, light that pours through us if we're open to it. The more open we are, the more willing we are to be in what I call like real-time forgiveness. You know, whatever's up in the moment, throw it off. Let it, you know, cancel it. Just drop it so that you can be that open channel, so that you can be that Christ right now in this moment. These sounds just come through you. It's like speaking. You know, you do it long enough. Michael's been speaking for like 4 decades, and it's like it just takes you over. And you know, there's times when people will say, you said, you know, 20 minutes ago that blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I have no idea what I said 20 minutes ago, but, you know, I'm here right now. But when you're that open, it just lives you and you're fully in the present moment. But yeah, my first, before knowing that I was toning, my first experience was actually at Heartland, and it just unfolded very organically. And then I just kept following that. But I didn't talk about it when I was sort of hanging out with scholars because, you know, they all looked at me like I had lobsters crawling out of my ears when I would say things like that. So I sort of kept it under. But now I realize the profound nature of it. People like Jonathan Goldman are doing amazing work with toning. His book, The Divine Name, about toning the sound Yahweh, or Stephen Halpern. Toning seems to be everywhere now. And I'm really excited to bring the Aramaic and the Hebrew nuance into that as well. So,
awesome. We do have a caller with their hand up. Area code 609, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? This is Mike Ormond from New Jersey.
Wow, Mike.
From tropical New Jersey, we just got a half a foot of snow.
Yeah, and I was complaining about having an inch of snow, but wow, Mike.
To Michael and Dale, because I've been Dale's friend for about 30 years. And
there you go.
Dale turned me on to Michael a long time ago, gave me a Why Again book, and it's just opened me up so immensely. It's just awesome. And Dale's concepts are phenomenal. So, of course, it's going through him, but it's pretty amazing. So thank you for that.
Wow. Thank you for calling. Very cool. Yeah, Mike was there in the beginning for me when I started sort of waking up, and at the time jamming A Course in Miracles and Marianne Williamson's Return to Love book down his throat, and tried for months and months and months, read it. And eventually he's like, you know what, you need to just like buzz off for a while and leave me alone. And I did. And then all of a sudden he called me one day in tears, you know. He had started reading Return to Love. And from there I met Michael, and sort of the rest is history, I guess you could say. But
yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
Nice to meet you, Michael. Welcome.
Thank you. I did have one question for Dr. Michael Rice. Can you explain what your doctorate is in? I've always tried to wrap my head around that. And I know you talk about neural pathways and all this, but...
Sure. I have two. I have one in naturopathic medicine, and naturopathy is the practice of healing without reference to x-ray surgery or drugs, only things that are natural to the body, which could include anything from forgiveness to herbs to fasting to detoxifying to colonics to homeopathy. There's a whole range of things that are practiced under the purview of naturopathy. And then the second one I have is in holistic philosophy. How does the whole game work? And, you know, that's really kind of the overview, is how do you put all the pieces together? Does physics necessarily conflict with theology? Absolutely not. The truth is there's only one thing to talk about, and because people talk about them in different languages, they think they're speaking about something different. So, you know, for instance, the theologian says, God, omnipresent power, holds everywhere present, creates all things, behind all things, makes up all things, and is unknowable except by the effects it creates. So now we hear the scientist who comes along and says, well, you know, you can forget that God stuff. We got energy. We're, you know, there's only energy in the world, and of course it makes up all things. It's everywhere present and omnipotent, and it has all the same descriptors. When you get rid of the babble of all of these different professions, you know, psychology says, oh, we have this thing called the collective unconscious, and it covers everything and is all power. And, you know, they're all talking about, there's only one thing to talk about, and it's that this energy system called life. And so my doctorate in holistic philosophy is, how do you put all that together? And what my experience is that when people hear truth in one conceptual language, they look at it and go, that's really interesting. How cool is that? But when people hear that same truth in several conceptual languages simultaneously, it cracks the brainwash and things start to flow and move. And, you know, back to Dale's original conversation, those things in us that have not been moving begin to move, and it changes everything. So that's where I'm coming from, and of course, all of that is absolutely meaningless in the face of what Yeshua gave us in the Aramaic. You know, that's really the overarching key to the whole thing, is out of the Aramaic, and in particular, the Aramaic forgiveness process. How do you go inside yourself and remove what doesn't belong?
Absolutely.
We're down to about 1 minute, so go ahead if you got a quick question for us.
I think you pretty much covered it. Thank you very much for answering my question.
Awesome. Well, we're delighted. Dale, DaleAllenHoffman.com. You can check out his work. He's got an intensive coming up in February. You can check out Heartland. We're going to be in Costa Rica in February with an intensive. The project there is coming together. We'll be letting you know more about that. And we appreciate everybody who's chosen to join us. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. That's the greatest gift you can give the world. Give your gift. We appreciate you. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.